Ideas, perceptions, symbols, sounds, spoken language, written language. Much has been written about the mysterious creative process with which only the human can express through the word. Sacred scripture often teaches of the power and the impact of the word at the cosmic as well as at the human level. Infants acquire language as do adult learners of second languages. Sound is heard, images are created within, sound is mimicked and perfected, messages are learned, an original thought is expressed orally, and then can be read and written. The progression of the process is universal, from abstract vibration and internal life to physical and psychic expression and communication. The self-conscious entity using the human form is needed to express on this plane. For the caregivers of the very young, the process, the acquisition of the process, seems most mysterious. Religious treatises expressed ideas of cosmogony in such phrases as "in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was made flesh." Vibrations are both mystical and sacred. Scientists like Dr. Emoto of Japan study how vibrations of sound and electricity can affect water, plants, and animals. And students of theosophy can ponder on the power of emotions that are masked or encased in a word. The student of theosophy is reminded of the Hermetic phrase, "as above, so below," in all of these examples. And the student wonders why the Christ taught that it is crucial to pray within the closet of the heart, in silence, rather than in a collective, in a church, or a temple. Why is silence said to be golden? Why did parents teach children to count to 10 before speaking? Why did the Buddha teach the practice of right speech? Gentle speech, which causes no anxiety. Speech which is true, and yet friendly and kind. Speech that is useful. Speech which is of the sattva, or spiritual nature. Today, much is made of freedom of speech around the world. In a recent interview, the Grammy Award-winning musician T-Bone Burnett explained the role of music in the human condition as he has researched it. He proposed the fact that in the course of human evolution, there was a long period prior to the development of language. For thousands of unrecorded years, humans sang melodies, tones, harmonies, to symbolize ideas in a universal, soulful manner. Burnett theorizes that it is only with the development of language that both poetry and poisonous propaganda could be created. Without the earlier universal tones, the word could be personalized, weaponized, made divisive. And so he reminds us that freedom is not license. Freedom of speech needs to be tempered by morality. In this range of research and consideration lies a basic assumption that sound, the word, is sacred, a reflection of the power resident within the soul of the human state. In fact, the student of theosophy might readily posit that sound, the spoken word, and certainly the written word, are all points of energy that, when emitted or expressed, can cause great impact on all other entities and manifestation. Blavatsky wrote the following in the first volume of The Secret Doctrine. You can find it on page 280. Quote, "Man ought to be ever striving to help the divine evolution of ideas. The presence. The presence. The word made flesh. Gurus, generations of great seers across the duration of the Manvantara, taught by holy words to students who listened in silent contemplation. The spiritual force of the word in the heart, in the soul, was considered to be magical. The word can be brought into the reality of the vibrations of this plane in the form of vows, blessings, invocations, calls for help, and responses of altruistic service. This is the magic of natural law used for the common good. However, the same process can be realized to create curses, lies, gossip, frivolous small talk, slander, verbal abuse, and microaggressions, the call to violence, and the call to causeless hate. The same process can be misused to create passivity through the use of mantras, chants, and incantations. Only the human can decide which process and how to use it. For the soul of the word follows the heart of the human. The fact that ideas are things and can blend with elemental forces is staggering. Used from spiritual universal planes of creativity, the poetry of the language of the soul is an unmatched elevating power. Used from the lowest of the psychic or constricted personal plane of creativity, the power of the language of the physical has a devastating karmic effect. The soul of the word reflects the development of the soul within the creative human, and it has been so since the beginning of the Manvantara and long before. In Transactions of the Blavatsky Lodge, the student reads that the spirit, the voice, the word is akin or correspondent to the triad known as Atma, Buddhi, and Manas. It can be expressed in color, sound, and numbers. The logos, or the word of the cosmic level, is incarnate wisdom and can change thought everywhere to the higher, to the highest. If the earliest symbols of the point in the circle described in Transactions on page 83 represents the unmanifested logos or idea, and the symbol of the triangle within the circle is that of the first manifested logos, then latent thought or potential thought lasted as reality until the third phase of emanation, when will and imagination could be used for an active effect of manifestation. The philosophy of theosophy presents the laws of man's inner activity, the role of vocabulary, of the language of conscience, the alphabet as an expression of the seven principles of man, and in our dense period of manifestation, how man uses the alphabet of the spoken and written forms means how he can understand the inner life. It is in the third object of the original Theosophical Society that a student is invited to study the unexplained laws of the psychical nature of man For the sake of the first object, human solidarity. Actions speak louder than words. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Such sayings are common and quite old, and are equally fallacious when studied in the light of theosophy. Ideas are the true plane of first action. The word is the embodiment of the spiritual and psychic powers latent in man, of thought made manifest. As such, the spoken and written word carries much power in an everlasting rippling of karmic effects across all generations and all time. Every human can live from the interior life to practice more benevolence, intelligence, and wisdom. The language of conscience, the soul of the word, can create philosophy and reform. General apathy, despair, and selfishness can be distilled privately and in silence so that the chain reactions of hate, anger, fear are not voiced, are not created, are not extended on this shared plane. Considered from the loftiest and most universal of spiritual heights, the mysterious power of Kriya Sakti is the power of thought that allows the production of external, perceptible, phenomenal results by its own inherent energy. That universal force, reflected down into the humblest human existence, is the magic of the psychic and spiritual forces using the body, the brain, the mouth, to make thought and motive manifest to one and to all. William Q. Judge wrote about the eternal verities of the wisdom religion. In summary, he wrote about the fact that man is soul, that all nature is sentient, that all is evolving under law. It is the language of the soul that colors all points of manifestation, inner and outer, invisible and visible. It is the attitude of the mind that soul brings to the use of the word that takes the voice of the silence from the secret to the open. When nature, self, and oneness is seen as a seamless identity, then the full power of the expression can be felt. The Christ, enlightened and unfettered, had the wisdom to know the best use of the word, when to speak mysteries to disciples, and when to use parables with the masses. Krishna, speaking to Arjuna, said, "Unto thee who findeth no fault, I give mysterious knowledge." In that one phrase, it is possible to read between the lines, read into the words, and to become inspired to work on with the laws of nature for the good of all. For life itself has speech and is never silent. William Q. Judge has written articles and letters on the proper use of the soul of words. Use the right word to convey an idea as intended and to accurately understand what idea is being conveyed by others and by life itself. Find the idea behind what is being said, as ideas have words as shadows. Speak to and from the heart. He wrote to remind us that violations of universal brotherhood grow out of the character and not the language of the violators. Raise the self to right morals, conduct, character, aspiration, ideals, and the entire human race will rise as well. Let all idle talk and concern of others slip by and not meddle. Do not meddle in it. Retire to the silence within and let karma take care of its own. In this way, the student, as all humans, can walk in the ways of the spiritual rather than in the ways of the lowest psychic. Those who would use animal magnetism and mesmerism to control the masses can be neutralized by those who listen and who have learned to generate wisdom in action. When and how to speak and to write needs to be learned. The power is in the pause. It comes from within. How will each student use that power to endow the soul of each word, to vibrate with the impulse of compassion, as when the Logos first emerged? How can each student assist in the endeavor to use language to give as much insight as humanity can handle? The Gita is more than 5,000 years old. It is written. It is a song to be sung. It is a text to be read and studied. And in the soul of its words is found all that humanity can use now and far more. The first humbly recall the wisdom of Thich Nhat Hanh, the Zen Buddhist teacher from Vietnam. He taught that deep listening is the foundation of right speech, to listen mindfully, to respond rather than to react to others, to kindly assert eternal truths is to sustain the soul of the word. Choose not to soak in harsh words. Words can be gifts to heal, to comfort, to uplift. We are just to do it through a self-aware, devoted endeavor. As Voltaire said, writing is the painting of the soul. So ideate, speak, and write from the best of motives possible, and soul will prevail through tone, through vibrations, through applied spiritual energy in the word. I'm sure that you came this morning to this session with your own thoughts on the subject matter, and I hope I haven't been too wordy. SL?
Regarding this tight overall arching theme of psychic and spiritual powers, in the presentation, it's mentioned that we need to look behind the word or within the word, and that would seem to require a true clairvoyance. And yet, Mr. Judge, it says in the Ocean of Theosophy that without even the lower kind of clairvoyance, we couldn't understand the communications we have with one another. So using words, understanding words, involves the use of our clairvoyant powers, higher and lower.
It's true. And that's why so many people find the process of a baby developing speech to be so magical, to be so mystic. And really, if we stop and think about this morning, some of us are sitting in front of little computer screens in isolation. We are picking up physically vibrations, both by our eyes and our ears. We will speak to one another by processing internally and then emitting vibrations, confident that there is a power that allows our brother, our twin souls, to pick up those vibrations and to internalize them, to assimilate them, to work with them, and then respond to them. What we're doing is a very dense example of clairaudience, clairvoyance. We're using psychic senses far above the physical brain, far above the physical senses. And as soul, we're using them to communicate, to empower, to create a record of these eternal truths for all posterity. If we stop and think, how in the world are we doing this? And we do it simultaneously. Many of us even take it a step further and take physical notes. So we're kinesthetic, we're writing like crazy, trying to record what we've heard while we're thinking about it. It's an invisible spiritual process that we combine with soul, spirit, psychic sensation, and then bring forth into the physical. It's really awesome. Theosophy Hall.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's interesting to watch children learn languages, especially those that are their parents are from other countries. We've seen little ones learn two different languages at one time. Sometimes initially they mix them up, but eventually their brains are able to separate the languages. And so they learn two languages at one time. And it's just, you know, it's just a magical process to watch.
That brief comment about childhood acquisition of languages brings to mind Blavatsky. You can do a study of her lingual abilities and come away amazed at the process that she exhibited. She, in Russia, had a native language of Russian and French, because certainly all the highly educated in Russia at that time were French speaking. Then she traveled around the world as a single woman at a time when this was unheard of. We know that she was in Asia, India, Tibet, Nepal. She was throughout South America, where the indigenous had their own languages and where Spanish was spoken. She moved through the United States, speaking, listening, teaching, writing in English. And there came a time in her life when someone said something to her in a language not of the location where she currently resided. And she reacted with, that language belongs to the other location and the other vibrations. So what she was actually doing was a process in which spirit, using psychic powers, was able to pick up language in a particular environment, operate fully in that environment. And we know when she brought forth the secret doctrine of Isis Unveiled, she was bringing together a bouquet of written sources in a wide variety of languages. So here we have an example of how every child can acquire language, one or more or many. And we also see an exemplar of an individual soul, highly developed, who was able to control psychic senses and creative processes and function in words as symbols in a variety of ways in a variety of different planes. It's really a remarkable study and one that's highly recommended. Theosophy Hall again.
We have a follow-up, but could we ask the phone participant to, it keeps intruding on this screen, to mute their phone. There's one participant that's needs to be muted. Go
it's
ahead.
Muted.
Okay, follow up.
So to go along with this part, we are told that by actually writing something. That, you know, we have the words in our head, and they were told that if we actually write it down, that it impresses us better than, you know, like even if we type it. There's something about the tactile process of writing words that will, you know, stay with us better. I mean, we're just wondering what that connection is.
There's been a lot of brain research, and again, this is on merely the physical. There's something called an eye-hand-mind complex. The reason why parents and caretakers are advised to get children to coordinate their hand fine motor skills with their eyes and to try to solve little problems, very rudimentary motions and such, is that that connection between the brain, the eye, and the hand needs to come to a particular, oh gosh, maturity or bloom, I'm not sure what the word is, prior to the acquisition of the ability to read. But we know it's not about the physical. It's not that the handwriting and the process of writing or the process of stimulating the physical brain, that's not where the power lies. Where the power lies is in the self-conscious entity coming into a phase of reality, a monastic reality, in which the physical can fully be used in the light of the internal self, self-awareness contemplation. And this whole thing raises a perhaps a bit of a side issue, but it's a true issue for those of us who are students of theosophy. In the modern world of public education, college campuses, a transition to the electronic book has almost fully been made. And as such, it's possible now, even by middle school, for a student not to handle paper and pencil, but use a keyboard, to be using electronic screens to read, not physical books. And the art of note-taking is quickly diminishing. And as the comment just emphasized, the whole process of being able to listen and see, to read, to take information in, to process it internally, psychically, as close to spiritually as we can, at least in a calm, monastic, or thoughtful way, and then to take notes, that is the underpinning of the acquisition of knowledge, the strength of the memory to be able to attend to something and to internalize it fully. And what's really going on according to theosophy? According to the philosophy, that entire physicality, moving from what's in writing, what we can touch physically, what is kinesthetic, pulling the essence of that into the psychic domain of true senses, pulling it into the monastic domain of true thought and ideation, means that there is a memory, an eternal memory, that's going to go on into the future and impress all entities in life. So look into the use of keyboards and electronic books, do some research on brains and the physicality of how they express what's going on spiritually and psychically, and find your own path to learning and to teaching. Theosophy Hall?
There's a chat. Do you want me to read it?
Oh, yes, please. Thank you.
Okay. What is the theosophical interpretation of John 1:1? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God.
Okay, so we're referring to the Old Testament and the New Testament in this study. So in the beginning was the Word. In the beginning was, according to theosophy, an emanation, if you will, a degree of vibration, a degree of the logos, the ideation, the Word, of what all manifestation could be. So that first phrase pertains to the eternity of what the of what could come to be from the most ethereal, abstract, absolute state emanating a highly ethereal spiritual reality. The second part of John 1:1, the Word was with God, refers to that deific essence that emanates from that absolute and tries to convey the fact that these early universal collectivity of ideation was deific, was creative, was with the spiritual oneness, which theosophy would say is no particular God. The esoteric implications of John 1:1 is that there is a deific essence, a loving force, compassionate force, and that this early creativity of ideation, this early evolution from the most ethereal into an astral kind of ethereal invisible substance was deific in essence. And the third phrase, the Word was God. If this is all about force and power coming from the absolute, and then that force and power diversifying, manifesting in differentiation at all planes and levels, the potential for that force is to remain deific if self-conscious entities will make it so. So this entire process of think before you speak, count to 10 before you speak, silence is golden. The invitation is for each soul to retreat within to the closet of their hearts, to contemplate doing no harm, to contemplate universality, universal brotherhood, how to assist the other, and therefore to remain a deific essence, a ray of that deific essence. And so we can read into these scriptures. They've been interpreted in many different ways, but if we read into the words, we use our intuition, we use whatever limited ability of clairvoyance that we've got, clairaudience that we've got, we can see many, many different meanings and applications that we can bring into our own lives and how we use words and language and communication. Theosophy Hall?
Oh, yes. We're told that at the beginning of this period of manifestation, that emanating from deity is a what they call a thrill. The thrill goes through the universe. That's a vibration we're assuming. And words are vibration as well. So we could we almost say then that this thrill is some kind of verbiage?
If we can if we can think that we have five senses right now on this plane, and they are dense, aren't they? They're physical, even though some sight, hearing, smell is invisible. It's still physical on this plane. And so verbiage on this plane is a physicality. And it's a potential, it's an expression, but it's not the real thrill or vibration. The reality is we think we're looking in the eyes of each other. We have this strong sense that, you know, there's somebody sitting on the platform of Theosophy Hall and somebody else has a picture up on a Zoom box. But we know that this is only physical, and that far above, beyond, within, there is an eternal pilgrim soul that is using the vibrations. And we even know that the astral is like a matrix, an electromagnetic field of vibration. And the physical forms on the astral. And even though we think this physical is so tangible, isn't it magical how we age from 20 years old when we're still waking up in the morning to an elderly person staring back in the bathroom mirror just a few steps away? The physical form is constantly changing. We know that the molecules, the cells, the atoms are constantly changing. They're thrilling, they're vibrating, they're coming, they're going, there's absolute motion. So manifestation is temporary. It's the thrill, it's the vibration that's ongoing, that's so very important. And doesn't tone have a lot to do with that? You know, the phrase will bless your heart can be used as a blessing. Bless you, bless your heart, you know, hoping within, motivating within to be kind and supportive to the other. But we know that in certain regions of this country, delivered with the right tone of voice, no matter how syrupy sweet it's delivered, well, bless your heart is a condemnation. It's an insult. It's pretty much saying, oh, aren't you a sweet little idiot? So tone and volume and all sorts of expression, we have to be very guarded with what we use. And I think I just saw a flash of another chat.
There is another chat, yes. Go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead.
What about the word om? What is the theosophical teaching about the word om? You can do a lot of research on the word amen and om. And if they mean so be it, if they can have a myriad of interpretations of what they mean in everyday world. I know they're used in a variety of contexts, probably used with a variety of dialects and accents and different intonations. But for the student of theosophy, we honor that sound as a peace-giving realization of spirit in matter, spirit in mind. And again, you'd have to research different religious philosophies, different areas of the world, to understand all the different ways that it's used and all the different inflections that's given. But in the Western world, om and amen may have similar functions. Theosophy Hall?
You know, it's really something with the vibration, the sounds, the colors, everything in our environment. And it was mentioned that the power is in the pause. And it's interesting because, in a sense, a pause is a, we're just, could it be considered the pause is like a pregnant possibility of something, whereas a lot of today's so-called music is just pure noise. It really is. And some people are honest about it, that they like noise. It's just a constant, there's no pause. It's just, it's constant, what they call guitar shredding, where it's just like, it's, there's really no pause in it. So we find it disturbing, actually, that it's not a force of peace and tranquility. It's more of anger and just chaos.
So the power remains in the pause, doesn't it? A pregnant pause, maybe. Each of us has a different degree of physical sensation and ability to hear, to speak, to sing, etc. Music is differentiated according to each soul and the skandhas that create the physicality of a personality. But we remain self-conscious entities. We can at any time and at all times pause, silence the outer frame, calm the mind, calm the jitters, and listen intently to whatever's being said, or attend to whatever sensations we're getting from the physical environment. And during that pause, something soulful, something spiritual happens. The minute we begin to think, I'm not the person listening to that, I'm soul. What am I experiencing? What's my duty to mitigate the experience, to uplift the experience? And what choice can I make? What can I say? What kind of tone? What kind of volume? It's a thoughtful premeditation where we're pregnant with power. We haven't yet given birth to the manifestation of that power, but it's there and it's real, and it is the real reality of soul in action. And in the endeavor to try to turn within and listen to our hearts and try to picture, to imagine just the right response in that moment, creativity has begun. We're generating thought at a very high level, and then we emit the vibrations magically through the creative use of force in our physical mouths. And we do this without pause all day long, without considering the impact that we're having as we create and generate, as we ideate and voice something. We take it for granted. And so in the simplest of ways, like that word om that was just questioned, there may be a very short little word that doesn't look like much, but to somebody it can have tremendous power and can be a fabulous spiritual soulful use. Theosophy Hall?
Yes, so it's interesting in today's world, it's almost like we have to fill this vacuum, this void, with sound and conversation all the time. Now there are certain religions and there's certain ascetic practices among disciples of various sorts that they really don't want to engage in idle speech, just like necessary speech, kind speech, affirming speech, but not just chit chat constantly, which is admittedly, most of us just were acculturated to it and we engage in it. But I mean, not everyone, but it's very common. So Is it good to develop some sort of austerities of speech? Is it a good practice? Will it help us to focus better instead of just rambling on, as it were?
Yeah, the whole legend or lesson of the Tower of Babel is alive and well amongst us, isn't it? You know, we have 24/7 news broadcasts on every degree of electronic communication we can imagine. And frequently we'll hear our friends talk about the noise in my head. I can't shut off the noise in my head. And we know in the Buddhist tradition, they talk about the monkey mind, that there's this constant jabbering, constant mulling over of ideas. So, you know, Mr. Judge kind of brings it home in that sound and words communication is extremely useful. It is part of this plane of existence right now in these physical frames. This is how we communicate. T-Bone Burnett was onto something, because he was kind of referring to some ancient teachings where there was a time period where there was telepathic communication. There was no sound. There was no word or language. And we know that in today's world, we can find traces of that. You know, the mother and the child, a caretaker and a class, a child and an elderly dying parent, between two spouses or two very dear friends. We can find time periods when silence can be maintained. Telepathy, a sense of what the other person is feeling and needing, can be developed. And there can be camaraderie in a look, in a smile and body language. We know all that is possible. So the austerity of speech is when to speak, when not to speak, what to speak, what not to speak. If we practice silence in periods of meditation, perhaps in the morning and in the evening, and then we, throughout the course of the day, make every effort to create these little powers of the pause, little powerful silent retreats, while we consider how to respond and how to communicate. These are the greatest austerities of all, because they are lifting the possibility of the physical, lifting the magnitude of the astral, the psychic, up to the highest level we can imagine in a compassionate, shared, creative manner. But we can't remain silent all of our lives. That's not what we're here on this plane for. There is a little quote in Letters That Have Helped Me. You can find this on page 131. And it is something that Mr. Judge loved very much. It's from the Book of Items. The light of the eye fadeth, the hearing leaveth the ear, but the power to see and to hear never deserteth the immortal being, which liveth forever, untouched and undiminished. So the power to see and to hear. And this morning we might add the power to speak, to voice. Thanks for coming this morning. We're out of time. But Wednesday will be another creative moment in which we'll talk for real.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.